Welcome to the Celtic Myth Pod Show, bringing the tales and stories of the ancient Celts to your fireside. Episode 36, To Ride a White Horse.
Hello and welcome to the Celtic Myth Pod Show. I'm Ruth.
And I'm Gary. In this show, we're going to continue with the second half of the quick story from the first branch of the Mabinogion. But first,
if you'd like to send us a message or some feedback, drop us a line at garyandruth@celticmythpodshow.com or have a look at all the things that we've got available for you on our website at celticmythpodshow.com.
Including the show notes, which will tell you more about the story you've been listening to, such as what our sources are, a map of the area that the story takes place in, and a list of the characters' names, so you can see how the strange-sounding names look written down.
Sounds great. So, have we got any news and views today?
Well, I thought it might be interesting to talk about that fantastic Bronze Age sacred water site that we've got in this country.
Oh, more news about Flag Fen then?
No. This is a completely undeveloped and mostly unexplored site that is right on our doorstep on the south coast.
Ah, you're talking about the Shinewater Park dwellings, aren't you?
Yes. About 10 years ago, so that they could minimise the risks of flood damage to the houses on the marshland where we live, the local council decided to make a huge lake to take up all the water.
That's right. But what's really exciting is that they found the remains of Bronze Age wooden trackways across the marshes.
They did.
Some of which looked as if they'd stretched on for miles and could have been up to 8 metres wide. That's an astounding 26 feet wide.
Yeah, one of a kind, I think. They also found platforms and the remains of a house that was built on a platform. And they found a unique bronze sickle, remarkably preserved, buried in the peat, and that had been given up to the waters as a votive offering.
Yes, the sickle, which is now preserved in the British Museum, had a small curved blade, less than 12 centimetres long, and perfectly designed to cut marsh reeds down.
Maybe this was the type of sickle that the Druids used to gather mistletoe, or so the Romans said anyway.
Who knows? But anyway, the whole site has been reburied to preserve it, as our local council can't invest in what's been described as possibly one of the most important wetlands in northwest Europe. Typical.
We know how important sacred water sites were to the Celts. And, as local residents, we can tell you that the trackways head off to high ground where stone circles were discovered, now sadly long gone, on one side, and marshland stretching for 12 to 15 miles on the other. Now, if all that were used, this could make the site possibly the largest sacred water site in the British Isles.
Absolutely. I mean, the things they can
amazing.
Do with this. I was also thinking that there's the burial mounds on the hills as well, which were probably built by the same people.
Quite probably.
I mean, the things they could do with this site, they could build a visitor centre, do some serious excavations, and really learn a lot more about Bronze Age culture that was prevalent right on our doorstep.
Yeah.
Let's hope that a light bulb flashes in someone's mind and they decide to investigate the site a little more in the future.
That'd be cool. Anyway, we'll have all the links in the show notes so that you can follow up on this fascinating story.
So tell me something.
Well, if I can, although not a lot more is known about the site as it's now underground.
No, what? I know about that. Oh. I want to know if it's time for the story yet.
Yeah, it must be by now.
So, remind us what happened last time.
In the last episode, Puig had somehow managed to say goodbye to Aran's beautiful and mysterious queen, and headed back to Dyved. There he had met with Raun, and the two had struck a firm friendship. Puig discovered that his lands had been ruled wisely, and promised to live up to Aran's example, and they called him Puig, Prince of Anun thereafter.
As for Araun, well, he returned to Annoon and reconciled with his queen. But she knew well that the balance had been disturbed, and there would be trouble before it righted itself again. For 3 long and glorious years, the Cantrevs of Dyved prospered, and the fields flourished with new life under the bright beams of the life-giving sun. The cows in the fields gave more milk than ever they had given before, and the sheep herds flourished on the hillsides. The grain pits were full to overflowing, and the workers in the fields took to resting in the shade at noontide, while the sun was at its height. Even the winters were mild, with a gentle sun keeping the harsh snows away, and the stormy winds calming to just soothing breezes. Everyone knew that the land was pleased with her strong king, and all the people of Dyved loved Pwych, Prince of Annoon. It seemed as if a golden age had descended upon the valleys of Dyved, and the gods were smiling upon them all. Everyone was content. Everyone, that was, except Pwych himself, who had grown tired of the constant hunt, the feasting, and the nagging voices of his advisers. Everyone that was, except perhaps Dyved's chief druid, the Pendaran, he with the voice of grumbling thunder, who stood often by Pwych's side, speaking of omens and warning him that the land would suffer if the rains and storms did not return soon. It was true that the rivers were beginning to shrink back into their valleys, and many muddy riverbanks were already becoming hard-baked, with cracked fingers creeping towards the shores. Pwych felt that there was something missing, some emptiness in his life that he had no real name for. It wasn't the raids and the battles that had melted away in the time of peace, those he could live without. It was some sort of fleeting memory that constantly escaped him, some fleeting glory, some misty paradise that never quite swam into focus. It must be something that he had seen, or something that he had gained whilst he had been in Death's kingdom, that was creating a void within his soul in these heady days. The druid council had begun to whisper into his ear that it was time he took a wife to his name and bore Dyved an heir. But Pwych was not yet ready to give himself over to such dutiful tradition. The Pendaran, his personal chief druid, rumbled deep in his chest and told Pwych he would hold them off as long as he could. But Pwych knew it was only so long that the druid could do so. Something rang deep in Pwych's soul with the searing beauty of flame when he thought of such a wife. But putting the feeling into words escaped him. He sat pondering these things in the main hall at Arberth as it became noisier and noisier. The ladies of the court had retired, and his proud companions were becoming drunker and drunker as the tales of the day became more exaggerated and even more outrageous. Pwych called to Delwyn, who only slightly unsteadily on her feet came to his side.
My lord?
Delwyn, I tire of the feast tonight. I feel the need for the wind in my hair. Where could we go this fine night?
Well, it's the night of the Silver Wheel, my lord. We could take a walk to the old seat of Arberth.
Gorsedd of Arberth, where the old tribes used to hold their judgments.
Aye, my lord. Beneath the light of the wheel, the view should be splendid on this eve.
Beware, my lord. It is said that whoever sits upon that she-mound will receive either great wounds or perceive a vision of wonder. The gods will set their judgment upon you.
If that is indeed so, worthy Pendaran, then I will climb onto that mound and sit myself down. With my good companions around me, I fear no such blows, and I would gladly see a wonder. 'Tis a good idea, Delwyn. Gather some score of my true companions,
and will set out within the hour."
And so it was, that with the moon beginning its slow ascent into the heavens, Puech and his retinue set out across the plain for the mysterious mound of judgment, the Gorsedd ar Berth. They could see the ancient hill of the mounds, Bryngerau, from afar, its bare lumpy crown rising dark against the light of the moon, stark in silhouette. They wandered eastwards along the banks of Arberth's river, the sea voice, listening to its gentle song and chatting quietly together, until they had to turn north to head directly for the hill. The warm evening breeze did little to make them comfortable under their cloaks as they strolled across the half-league separating the halls of Arberth from the wide hill, its sides covered in dense woodland. They were even less comfortable as they entered those woods, stifling darkness beginning to sink around them. They started the slow climb through the trees, along an ancient overgrown trackway to the westernmost height of the hill. A tree-filled valley sloped down away from them on their right-hand side, rising again to another high point on the hill in the east. As they emerged from the tree line, they could see the earthen slopes of another mound on the far side of the valley, as well as the one far above them. Each had a tall grey standing stone on the top of their mounds, which cast pale moonlit shadows like ancient fingers to the plain below. They were like guardian twins watching over the valley, creating a road of shadow and pale light that led deep into the darkened trees. As the knights crested the hill and the ring of stones around the mound ahead became visible, many of the companions started whispering about the ghosts of their ancestors, or worse still, the resentful shades of those of the old tribes whose ways had been long forgotten. Puech hushed them and took his seat atop the mound, with his back against the ancient stone, gazing down into the valley, across the trees, and over onto the plain beyond. He could see the thin evening mist stretching far over the plain like a gossamer mantle around Arberth, thicker where the river lay and even denser amongst the trees below him. His true companions were shifting uncomfortably, no doubt wishing to be back in the warm hall drinking their fill, but they faded from Puech's awareness as his thoughts drifted back to his time in Annoon, at the court of Araun, and the half-remembered wonders he had seen there. After a while, a flash of movement amongst the trees broke his reverie. Eagerly he sat up and watched, silencing his companions. A pale horse, ridden by a lady wearing a flowing golden dress, shining brightly in the risen moonlight, ambled out onto the plain. The horse was a large and powerful courser, but she handled it with ease as it gently headed out through the thin mist. She turned the pale horse, and soon she was heading to a spot below where Puech and his knights were eagerly watching.
"My companions, do any of you know who that fine lady is?"
"We've been wondering the same thing, my lord. We do not know who she is."
Puech called for one of his pages then, saying,
"Boy, run down the hill and find out for me who that lady is."
"Yes, lord, I will."
And with that, the boy streaked down the hill, and Puech could see that he would easily be able to intercept the rider as he came out of the trees. And yet, somehow, the lady had already passed quickly by him as the lad emerged from the trees. Yet none of those watching from the hill could say how that had happened, as the pace of her horse had not changed. No matter how fast the boy ran, Puech could see that he had no chance of catching this gently ambling horse with its fine rider. The boy returned slowly to Puech, climbing up through the trees to stand before him.
"Lord, it is useless for anyone on foot to try and follow that rider down there."
"Yes, lad, I can see that. Take your ease now. Kellen, my young friend, run back to Arberth and get the fastest horse you can find, and chase after her for me."
"Aye, my lord, that I will."
The knight pounded furiously down the hill then, and the assembled company could see him rushing in a straight line across the plain towards Arberth, just as they could see the fine lady robed in softly glowing gold, still ambling, as if on a palfrey, across the plain just below them. It was not long after that that Kellyn emerged from the stockade around Arberth, on a long-legged roan, and streaked across the plain. He headed directly for them, suddenly changing course as he caught sight of the pale horse ahead of him. And then he leant his head into the neck of the horse, setting his spurs to the fine animal. He gained the base of the hill so quickly that Puig thought it certain he would catch up with the lady. He turned to look at her, and she and the horse had not changed pace at all, but they were already far ahead of Kellyn on his swift horse. It seemed that the more Kellyn urged his horse onwards, the greater the distance between the pair was. And yet, she was still going at the same pace as when she'd started. The breath was billowing out of the nostrils of Kellyn's horse, and the companions watched as he slowed the beast down and gently nudged it into a climb towards them at the top of the hill. Breathlessly, he stepped down in front of Puig.
"Lord, I know of no faster horse in this realm, and yet it was useless for me to try and catch her."
"I saw that, my true friend. There's some magic here, some sort of fey glamour on this lady, I'm thinking. Let us return to the court and get some rest."
"And a good drink."
They returned to the court then. After spending some time marvelling over what they had seen and staring deeply into their tankards, they retired to their quarters, whilst Puig went back to his own furs, settling down into dreams of half-seen golden apples and glorious, glowing white mares. The next day passed like any other. He and his retinue met with the companions, and they practiced many feats of arms, trying to outdo each other during the afternoon. As the evening began to settle on the court, Puig heard the complaints of the people in the Hall of Judgments, along with the druids and the law speakers. And then, with his duty done, he sat down to meet with the other nobles of his court. After the meal had been eaten, they called for the minstrels to play. The ale started to flow, and after singing the sagas of the ancient heroes for what seemed like an age, Puig stood on the head table and called for silence.
"Hold, good friends. Are all those who were with me last night upon the seat of Arberth here with me now?"
"We are, my lord."
"Good. Now tell me, who amongst us can explain the strange events of yester-eve?"
He waited a while, as they looked at each other nervously, each wondering what their lord was planning.
"Let us send for our chief stable hand, and tell him to bring along the fastest horse that we have in Dyved, and then we'll go again to the mound and wait once more."
"As you wish, my lord."
So they set out again for Bryn Caerai, and climbed through the trees, emerging for the second time on top of the hill amongst the stones surrounding the ancient she mound. Even as Puig was taking his seat once more atop the mound, a cry went up, and the golden lady could be seen once more. Puig watched the gracious lady ambling up to the hill on her beautiful pale mount, and he quickly signalled to the stable boy.
"Here is the same rider we saw last night. Off you go, lad. Find out who she is."
"I'll do that gladly, lord."
And then the young rider put spurs to his horse's flanks, and together they tore down the hillside, as if outracing the very wind itself. Puig watched the golden lady, gently ambling by, and yet she was already passing by the bottom of the hill. He could see the young rider hurtling through the trees out of the corner of his eye, plummeting towards the plain. Puig watched him break out of the trees and slow down as he approached the pale rider, matching her pace in a slow amble.
"Oh, that's clever. Now let's see him creep up on her,"
thought Puig, watching the slow chase very carefully. The stable boy gently increased the pace of his horse. And yet, still the distance between him and the lady remained the same. Puig could see the lad realise that the chase was futile and give his horse the freedom to run. It leapt forward with the eagerness of a hound on the chase, and Puig marvelled at the skill of the lad riding the wild wind. He turned back to the lady, but she was still gently pacing along, passing the hill, and would soon be out of sight. The distance between the steaming tornado that pursued the Golden Lady and her ambling pale steed had just increased again. It seemed that the more he strived to gain on her, the further ahead she was. Puig could see the stable boy look anxiously at the horse beneath him, and the pair came to a slow walk. He waited until the boy had returned from the top of the hill.
Lord, the horse cannot do any better than you've seen.
You've done well, lad. It's clear to me it's not possible for anyone to catch her. Not only that, but it's obvious she has some message for someone here on the plain, except she's too stubborn to deliver it. Well, let's go back to the court and get a drink.
Aye, Lord. This knight needs a filled goblet to finish it off well, I think.
So they returned to the halls of Arbers and spent the rest of the evening carousing and enjoying themselves. They finally retired, and Puig sat deep in thought by his own fire, his stewards fussing around him. Eventually, as the morning's wan light began to seep into the chamber, Puig threw himself onto the furs and fell into a deep sleep. He awoke later that day, with mists of dreams still clinging to him, vague memories of ladies tying ribbons onto the spears of knights before a battle, a feeling of unexplained embarrassment and discomfort accompanying the dream. The day passed quickly enough, and Puig had already decided that they would be returning to the hill for a third night, long before the meal started. They all ate heartily, and before the entertainment began, Puig called to his companions.
Where are all my true companions? Those who were with me last night upon the Mound of Arbers.
We are here, my lord.
Let us all go up to the She-Mound again, and we will sit and wait as before. But this time I will take my horse with me.
And so it was that Puig and his proud companions were leading Puig's beautiful dun mare, Keris, up to the seat of Arbers again. They settled, and Puig was securing the saddle blanket on the mare's back, when a cry went up behind him. He span round and saw the Golden Lady right out of the mist in the valley and head towards the road, ambling as slowly as before. He leapt into the saddle, taking the reins from the stable boy, and cried aloud in primal joy as he and Keris thundered down the hillside, weaving in and out of the trees. Just as suddenly, he broke out from amongst the trees and saw the proud horse ahead of him with its beautiful rider. They were still gently trotting along the road ahead of him, and Puig threw caution to the wind and gave the mare her head, calling for her to fly like the wind. Her hooves pounded into the earth, and the wind whipped her mane around Puig's face as he leant into her neck. He was thrilling in the power of her rippling muscles as she thundered along the road. He glanced up then and saw that the mysterious lady was even further away from him than before, and she was still just gently riding along. Surely it would only be a few more of the mare's huge strides and he would be upon her. But it was not happening. And then Puig did something he rarely did. He dug his spurs into the mare's flanks, driving her onwards to even greater speed. Her ears went up in protest and her breath came in deep bursts. Still, he could not gain on that stubborn, magical lady ahead of him. And his anger, slowly, began to recede. He let Keris relax and walk at her own pace, and rising up in the saddle called out,
"Maiden, in the name of the man you love most, wait for me!"
Miraculously, the glowing golden lady ahead of him stopped then, and turned the magnificent white horse round to face him.
"Gladly I'll wait, and it would have been better for your poor horse if you had asked that a while ago."
She waited as Puig rode gently up to her, feeling guilty, and looked at her in amazement. The tall mare was the most beautiful horse he had ever seen, with a silken sheen to her coat and a deep red in her ears. Her eyes were strangely pink, and watched Puig with eagerness. She pranced on the road in front of him with such contained power that Puig could feel it flowing over him in palpable waves.
The golden lady on top of her was wearing the most beautiful golden brocade dress that Pwych had ever seen. It flowed over the horse's withers like a burnished caress, shimmering lightly in an unseen wind. Her fair hands rose to the veil covering her long, flowing golden hair and lifted it over her head. Pwych gazed upon the face of a woman so beautiful that for a moment the world disappeared around him. His heart skipped a beat. Her gaze pierced him with eyes of the richest brown. His breath caught in his throat, and a fierce heat started to blaze within his chest. Never had Pwych seen any woman so beautiful, so enchanting, so wondrous, so purely and entirely woman. And now he knew the name of the void that lay within his soul, and its name was love.
Lady, may I ask where you come from? Where you're going to?
I'm going about my business, and I'm very glad to see you.
His heart leapt within his chest, and for a moment he could not speak. Every face of every maiden and every face of every woman faded from his mind compared to her beauty.
My welcome to you, lady. Will you tell me anything about your business?
As the gods are my witness, I will tell you, indeed, that I have ridden here in search of you.
Pwych nudged Ceres next to her and gazed deeply into her eyes, his senses narrowing until all he was aware of was the depth of her eyes and the sound of a gentle birdsong that flowed around him. He hardly dared hope what desire might have made her seek him out.
I think that's the best business you could have. Will you tell me your name, fair maiden?
Gladly, my lord. I am Rhiannon, the daughter of Havaeth Hen, the lord of the Kingdom of the Immortals. I am betrothed to a man against my will. I am to be given to this man, but I have never loved or wanted any mortal other than you. If you reject me, I still will not have him, but I have come here in search of your answer. Could you love me, my lord?
In the sight of the Most High, I tell you true, my lady. This is my answer to you. If I could choose from all the women and all the maidens in the world, oh, it is you that I would choose. I did not think that a man could fall in love with any woman at first glance. But in truth, there's no other explanation for the flame that now burns deep within me.
That pleases my heart, lord. I have carried that same love for you within me for many seasons now. If you would truly have me at your side, then let us arrange a meeting at my father's court before I am given to any other man.
The sooner the better, as far as I'm concerned. You have my troth. Arrange the meeting whenever you can.
I will, my lord. Let us meet a year and a day from tonight, the time of a courtship. And let us meet in the court of my father, Havaeth the Ancient. I will have the wedding feast prepared, ready for your arrival.
Gladly will I be at that meeting, my lady fair.
Then, my lord, farewell. And for the sake of my heart, remember to keep your given promise. I shall take my leave now,
my lady.
And so they parted, she returning to the mist, and he slowly nudging Ceres into the trees and up the hill to rejoin his companions. They rushed to him as he emerged from the trees and crowded around him. He directed them to return back to the halls of Arbeth, but whatever questions they asked him about the Golden Maiden, he would not answer, turning instead to other matters. In our next episode, Pwych gathers his men and takes the perilous journey to the otherworldly court of Havaeth the Ancient.
Ooh, exciting stuff.
It's getting good, isn't it? Have we got any listener feedback?
Yes, we have. Have a listen to the lovely message from Oksana from West Yorkshire.
Hello, Gary and Ruthie. It's Oksana from West Yorkshire. Thank you very much for your show. I started listening to it a while ago, and I'm still working my way up through the first shows. But I love listening to your special episodes, and I particularly enjoyed your Emog issue. That was wonderful, with really nice music and great traditional stories about goddess Brigid, who is my patroness. And I used these materials for my own Emog celebration, and I like to come back to it and to listen to it when I want to connect to the goddess. I would also like to mention that I really appreciate the style of your podcast, the tone of it, that it's so respectful and civilized and polite in the sea of podcasts and among pagan podcasts. That really makes you stand out in a positive way. So thank you very much for that, for all your hard work and creativity and inspiration. And I wish you all the best in this, your work, and in all your endeavors. Blessings. Bye.
Thank you, Oksana, for your lovely words. We're so glad that not only are you enjoying the shows, but you're finding them useful in your own spiritual life. You brought us a big smile, a feeling that we're actually helping people.
Yes, thank you so much, Oksana. That was really wonderful. My goodness.
Lovely, isn't it?
Yes. How do we follow that with a promo? we just have to play one, I suppose.
Yep, yep.
It's a hard act to follow, Oksana.
It is. How about this fascinating show that used to be called Media Astra Actera? That means between the earth and the stars, and that's what it's called now.
Okay, then.
So let's have a listen.
From where we stand, between the stars above and the earth below, we encounter all the mysteries of magic, myth, and modern science. Join me, Oriya Helene, for Between the Earth and Stars, a new evolution of the show previously known as Media Astra Actera, a monthly podcast weaving together astrology and astronomy, mineralogy and metaphysics, magic, meditation, and mystical musings on life. You can find the show on iTunes or visit the Temple of the Earth and Stars at www.earthandstars.org. Bright and dark blessings be with you where you stand between the earth and stars.
That was Oriya Helene with a superb introduction to one of the fascinating things they cover in their shows.
That show sounds pretty amazing. I must spend more time and give it a listen.
Absolutely. Before we go, we'd also like to say a massive thank you to Birgir from Norway for his donation.
Yes, thank you so much. And he was even kind enough to send a sound file using our feedback button on the website so that we knew how to pronounce his name. Wonderful. Thank you so much for all your help.
Oh, yes. Made it so much easier.
Okay. Hello, Gary and Ruth. You asked how to pronounce my name. And it's quite simply, it's Birgir. There are two syllables, Bir and Ger, and together, Birgir. I hope that helps. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Birgir.
Do we have anything else?
No, I think that's it. We really have come to an end.
In that case, we'll wish you many blessings and say...
Pulvaur.
You've been listening to the Celtic Myth Pod Show, available from CelticMythPodShow.com.
We hope you've enjoyed the show and will stay tuned for the next episode. You can send us an email or some voice feedback to Gary and Ruth at CelticMythPodShow.com. We'd like to say a special thank you to Coulan's Hounds, who provided us with the theme music for our show. You can find them at www.sfhounds.com.
We'd also like to say a massive thank you to Anne Roos, Kira, Celia, Dave the Bard, The Dolman, Keltoria, Kevin Skinner, Phil Thornton, S.J. Tucker, and Spiral Dance. All of these wonderful friends have given us unrestricted access to their music. More details about each of them can be found in the special Friends of the Show page on our website.
You'll find links to all of these wonderful artists in the show notes at shownotes.celticmythpodshow.com.